Welcome back to hour number two of Mind Your Own Business. Boy, Dex, we're working overtime here.
Boy, that sounded good the way you said it.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Here we are, Rick Broody, along with the Fountain of Business Information, back for round two, and Mike Matuz is hanging out with us. He did a great job the first hour, Mike.
Yeah, no, Mike's here to help us out, kind of ask some good questions and all that stuff. So, Mike, welcome to the second part of the show.
Thanks, Dexter. Said hope's as much fun as the first half.
I can't help but be more fun.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. What's our calling number, Dex? Is it 978-454-4980 still?
Exactly.
It hasn't changed?
And you can also go and see us on the website at myobtheradioshow.com, where you can also hit the button, listen live, if you're not new.
And with all these blogs and social networking sites, we're really getting up to speed,
oh,
you know?
I got to tell you, the Octopus Solution has taken us to a whole nother level. And I got to commend you and Mike on doing some great jobs with blogs.
We're learning.
Well, you guys are doing very, very good. You're very diligent about doing it. And like I said before, I'm not the guy to be writing any blogs. So thank you very much. I appreciate you guys putting the effort forward to do that.
Hey, Dex, what's online for hour number two here?
Well, today we have in studio with us, we have Chuck Morse, who does a show, The Fairness Doctrine.
The legendary Chuck.
The legendary Chuck Morse. And we were on Chuck's show about a week ago, 10 days ago, Friday. We had a great time down there. We didn't want the fun to stop. So we invited Chuck up here to join us this Sunday.
We have to finish some of our conversation we had, Chuck.
Yeah, it was picking up where we left off.
Exactly. We got a little into politics and some other things like that. So we're going to be getting into that a little bit later. But we also have Scott Cohen from Dotfire. Scott, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad you made it up today.
Welcome. We do have a technical person, so if we have any questions, we got someone who can maybe help us.
Well, I got to tell you, when I heard Scott was coming on the phone, I on the show with us, I got on the internet, and I started looking up dropfire.com, and it's very impressive. A great website and all that stuff.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're here to explain it, though.
Yeah, what is Dropfire all about?
Well, we're a software company based right here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and we are focusing on healthcare right now, getting hospitals to link up with each other so that the medical records made by different vendors and different systems can actually share information back and forth.
Are you HIPAA compliant, Scott?
We are, actually. We are.
See, Rick learned that from another guest we had on a while back. Good job, Rick.
Excellent.
You're paying attention.
Don't ask me what it stands for, but I know that's the sensitive ear. Boy, later when we talk a little bit about the healthcare bill, we've got an expert here, Chuck, you know? So, Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do for the healthcare? How does somebody use your service, your software?
Sure. Well, what we do is we come into a customer and we evaluate what they have already, what vendor provided them with what application. And the applications run the gamut. Inside a hospital, there can be 60 to 100 different systems in place with one hospital. And then when you start talking about going from hospital to hospital, it just becomes a nightmare in dealing with all the different nuances to the data systems and how they intercommunicate. So what we do is we figure out what is there, figure out how to interface to them, and then allow them to open up their data sources so that they can freely exchange information back and forth.
Are you a software techie yourself?
I am.
All right.
Just a question. I mean, a lot of times when you're exchanging data between systems, there are standards by which you have to conform to in order to get the two systems to match up. Are there standards when you're switching data between these systems in the hospital, or are you developing them as you go along?
Well, we're not actually developing standards per se. We leave that up to nonprofit entities typically who do it, or government bodies that do it. The issue is that not everyone adopts the same standard, nor do they do it at the same time. So you have to be able to do what's called crosswalking back and forth between the standards. But yes, there are standards for data exchange. There are standards for security, like HIPAA. There are standards for the exchange protocol, which is more like HL7, which is the big one in healthcare. The issue, again, is not only the fact that there are so many different standards, but there are different versions of those same standards. And furthermore, people adopt them in different ways.
Now, is this for, like, Beth Israel to talk to Mass General, or is it everybody in Beth Israel to talk amongst themselves and pass information along that way?
It's actually both.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's spot on. Beth Israel wanting to talk to Mass General, will be a great use case.
Okay, because that seems like when people go to specialists and they're having tests done here, tests done there, especially in an area like this. I mean, it's all we got around here.
Exactly.
Hospitals,
yes.
It seems like, again, that and Dunkin' Donuts. But anyhow.
There's plenty of them.
Yeah, there is. Thank God.
How about Great Clip?
Oh, yeah, that's coming. That's coming. But no, that was always been the struggle. I did some work years ago with a VA hospital, and they seem to have that down pretty good as far as their networking and talking to people. And all of this conversation with national healthcare now, it seems like it's going to become a huge part of it, and electronic file transfers and stuff like that. So that's what you're getting into, huh?
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point. When people are procuring their electronic health records, which is what the stimulus bill is funding, they have to be interoperable. So when they buy them, they have to work with the other systems that are in place.
And what about security? You know, you see people tapping into credit cards and, you know, all these other things. How do you prevent that?
It's a very important issue, and one that is still really being figured out down to the details of it. But with the stimulus bill, there's also a new HIPAA standard. We've brought up HIPAA before.
And what does that stand for, Scott?
The Healthcare Interoperability and Portability and Accountability Act.
Okay. I knew that.
I bet you're glad you asked now, huh, Rick?
It's the HIPAA.
Right.
Has anybody actually read it?
I haven't, to be honest.
No,
it's very thick document.
You just know how to follow the rules.
It's one of these things that takes up a whole library.
Right.
It's 2,000 pages, and we'll get into that later. Hey, question I have is, you know, when did you start Dropfire?
I actually started almost 9 years ago now.
Okay, and how have you been able to, you know, fund it to date? Or are you, you know, public, private, or how does...
We're a private health company, and we've been funding it, you know, really on bootstrap mode, meaning we, you know, kept it going over the years for the passion and the real belief in the eventuality of some type of success, and that means many different things to many different people. But along the way, we've taken on outside investors to keep us going, mostly individual angels, as well as, of course, the much welcomed revenue.
I just wanted to remind everybody, too, if anybody has any questions for Scott or for Chuck today, please don't hesitate to give us a call, 978-454-4980. This is Mind Your Own Business with Dexter, Rick, and Mike now.
You know, Scott, back to, in this economy, how difficult is it to try to raise capital for a venture?
Everyone says it's extremely difficult, which is true. It's difficult, but it's still possible, and that's the tack that I'm taking, is that, you know, you're going to have to knock on a lot of doors, and more so than you would have had to in better economies, but it's still possible. There are still plenty of investors out there. What I've found, though, is that it's more towards the institutional side now, where it really ran the gamut before, when you had individual angels that were putting in money, you had angel groups that were a little bit more risk takers, and now it tends to be the early stage venture capitalists that are more approachable and are actually making investments.
Now, what percentage of your time goes to, you know, the fundraising side as opposed to the, you know, running the business side?
You know, it really ebbs and flows. It depends on the stage that we're at and the motivating force as to whether or not we want to take outside investment. But right now, as I'm doing my roadshow, if you will, going around to venture capital firms and individual angel groups and angel investors, I'm putting the bulk of my time into it.
Excellent. Well, I think we have a call, Dex.
Yeah, we have Greg from Wellesley on the line. Greg, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Thank you, guys. I love your show.
Well, thank you very much.
I've been listening to your guest from the Dropfire, and it sounds like you're a translator of this information. Is that true?
That's correct, actually. Not getting too deep technically, but what we're doing is using artificial intelligence to figure out how to translate between systems. So
they claim Dexter and I have that, too.
Sorry, it's just our wives who say that.
We like to cut in with a joke.
That's good. I like it. Yeah, but absolutely, that's what we're doing, is what it comes down to it. We're translating between different, not necessarily language, although you can think of it that way, but it's more about the data formats.
So you mentioned that hospitals benefit from this. Is that who your customers are, hospitals? And what is the benefit to them besides, I mean, they can share information now, but how do you make it better for them?
Well, they share information in a very costly way right now, so it takes a lot of time to sit there and manually figure out how to translate between systems. Oftentimes, it's even done just by printing out a record and faxing it over. And so these things take time and money. You know, if you think about just a fax, it costs money for the admin to print it out and fax it over, which is measured in dollars, where you can eliminate those transactions that take place every day, all day, to the tune of millions per year.
Well, then the age-old thing about a fax, if it hits the floor, and how many eyes are going to see it before it gets where it's supposed to go?
Exactly.
So that's got to be a big
exactly.
issue with that. So.
Yep.
This is kind of a seamless type of situation for records. And, you know, if I go to my doctor and they need to find something from a different hospital, you seamlessly can get it, and they can pull it right up.
That's correct. And it's there in the format that they're used to seeing it as well, which is a big deal. When it comes to a doctor, he doesn't want to just get the data. He wants to have it in the fashion and format that he's used to seeing it in, so there's no learning curve.
So does that mean that I can go to different hospitals that are out of different systems if I want to go to a specialist with a referral or without a referral, and I don't have to bring data with me, and they can all share this information now?
Actually, that's an interesting point you bring up. It all depends on the protocols that are in place and the policies and procedures that those hospitals have. Do they have an agreement in place to share information? And in New England, actually, it's one of the more forward-looking areas of the country where, in fact, many of them are.
Great.
Hey, thanks for calling, Greg. Great question.
Yeah, Greg, thank you very much.
All right, sounds like a great product. Hopefully, We need some healthcare solutions. This could if it can save us money, it sounds great.
Absolutely. Yeah. We got to cut costs any way we can. You know, that brings up another question, vertical markets. I mean, does this technology apply to anything else?
It absolutely does. And the technology actually was created at MIT, and it was for the Department of Defense.
It's
a very astute question you have.
Wow. See, there's MIT
come
again.
Up with a good one every once in a while.
And we actually had been selling it into the public safety space prior. And Lowell Police Department right here in town is one of our first customers.
Wow, Merrimack Valley, see, pioneer.
See, look at that. Here we are, right in the hub of it all. And here it comes. MIT gets brought back up into our conversation about starting entrepreneurs and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm so impressed.
Hey, Scott, so is that part of the future of the company, is to, you know, get into some of these other vertical markets as they open up? Or?
Yeah, for interest of focus and for lack of, you know, millions of resources that we have at our disposal in both dollars and people assets, we've had to choose a focus. So we're going to get some traction in healthcare and then be able to transcend these verticals and go into other areas.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that's, if you can tackle that one and pull that off successfully, everything else will just fall in place, because everybody's got to look at that and say, geez, what a mess that is.
Yep.
And if you can get those guys happy, boy, you just feather in your cap to go forward.
Well, I mean, yeah, given that it is a mess and healthcare has traditionally been a mess, do you see actually what the government is putting in place is actually going to help you in terms of getting these programs done, or is it going to end up hindering you some?
You know, I'm looking to my left and thinking, this is a very political question. And
it's just an opinion.
And it's a political answer as well. A lot of people think that we're on the right path, and it's going to take some time, to the tune of a decade, for it to all be figured out, which is good for companies like myself that can help out with those issues. But you know, it is a serious problem that we're facing. We're almost the worst in the world, second only to a small country in the Pacific, as far as healthcare spending as a relation to GDP. And something has to give, because it's rising at 2 times the rate of inflation.
Yeah, that's crazy. Hey, I was hoping everybody could hang on for 1 minute. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Chuck Morris, the Fairness Doctrine, and we'll have Scott Cohen and
Dropfire.
Dropfire.com, and then we'll have Rick, Mike, and Dexter back. We'll be back after a short break.
Know what's happening right here in the Merrimack Valley. The only place to turn is 980 WCAP. Everybody gets it.
Hi, this is Dexter Fountain.
And this is Rick Broody. We want everybody to listen to Mind Your Own Business, Sundays at 10 a.m. on 980 WCAP, a show for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs.
If you own a business, manage a business, want to start one, buy one, or sell one, this show is for you, along with expert guests and entrepreneurs. The show is all business.
Mind Your Own Business, Sundays at 10 a.m. on 980 WCAP, where everybody gets it.
980 WCAP, the Merrimack Valley Smart Shopper.
This is Maura, the Smart Shopper for 980 WCAP. Read any good books lately? New books are expensive, but there are ways to get your hands on a great book for less. One Avenue is going the Warehouse Club route. Their prices are more favorable than straight-ahead bookstores, but the inventory is limited. And then there are loyalty clubs at specific book chains, but with an annual fee of $25 and reductions averaging only 10% off on paperbacks, how many members actually realize the savings over the course of a year? Truly savvy shoppers will go to their library. If there's a waiting list for a great read, it will be worth the wait. Think of what else you can grab from the stacks in the meantime. Used books are also a great value. Online sites, including halfprice.com and cheapestbookprice.com, are worth checking out. And so are library book sales. One of my favorite sources, thrift stores. I've hit pay dirt at Salvation Army stores, Goodwill, among others. After all, is there anything better than a good book? This is Maura, the Smart Shopper, bringing you the most value on 980 WCAP. Everybody gets it.
What are we going to search for?
Hi, this is Gary Summers, and yes, you have seen me on TV. And now you can listen to me on the radio every Tuesday right here on 980 WCAP, calling all collectors. Tuesdays from 1 o'clock till 3 o'clock. You can call in and get your psychic appraisal right here. I know what your stuff is worth because I know the value of 100,000 useless objects. So tune in to WCAP Tuesdays from 1 o'clock till 3 o'clock for calling all collectors. Everybody gets it.
Here we are back again at Mind Your Own Business. Rick Broody, Dexter Fountain, Mike Martuzza with Chuck Moore, Scott Cohen. Boy, how do we fit all these people in this room?
We just got so much going on in this little room here at WCAP. Hey, and no, I just want to remind everybody about our call-in number. It's 978-454-4980.
And speaking of that, we've got another caller.
Exactly. Somebody's listening to me when I say that now.
It's Charlie. Charlie, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Listen, Scott, I'm a little bit of a technologist myself, and I'm curious about the MIT aspect of what you're offering. I know there are a few data integration companies out there, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the about this MIT technology and what makes it different.
Okay, actually, you're right. There are a ton of companies out there that offer...
Did he sign the NDA yet,
Scott? I'll be political about the NDA. So there are a ton of companies out there that offer data integration. Where we differentiate is that not only are we employing this artificial intelligence that automates a lot of procedures, but we also are focusing on the semantics of the data. So it's not just about getting data from point A to point B. It's also transforming it into the format that people can understand.
Do you understand that one, Charlie?
I think I do. I think I'm following it. That's helpful. So you're going after the semantics, and you're making some of it happen automatically, I guess, is what I heard.
Yeah, the big thing is that we're eliminating a lot of labor that needs to be done by humans with this automation. And that does two things. One, it cuts your costs, but it also... eliminates a lot of the errors that were done prior.
See, that to me is fascinating. You can eliminate this artificial intelligence coming into it. That's just way beyond me. So,
well, Charlie, thanks for calling. We appreciate it.
And right now, thank you, Charlie. We also have Tom from Marlborough, New Hampshire, on the line. Tom, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, Tom. Great. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Scott. An interesting company. You're basically. You're in healthcare records maintenance, if that's a general category. Would that be accurate?
It's more than maintenance. It's about interoperability, getting the
right.
Two disparate systems to work with each other.
You know, one of the things, you know, cause since you're in a capital raise mode, you know, I'm quoting my friend from Hub Angels, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. I have a couple suggestions for you. I don't know if you've ever... I know you're talking to VCs and early-stage VCs and angels, but have you talked to any investment banks yet?
I've started to.
Okay.
I've been turned off a little by everyone wanting at least 30 grand of my money before they start working for me. But other than that, they seem
to be
understood.
You know, I know a company that, you know, it's very negotiable. And I don't want to sell them across the airways, but you know, we could make some contact. But it's Capstone Partners, CapstoneLLC.com is their website.
Yeah, actually, they're a very friendly firm. I've had a lot of success in dealing with them. They've opened up, even though I haven't forked over my $30K to them.
Right. You know, I think they have a new guy in the space, Tim Schmidt, who might be a really good person for you to chat with if you haven't already spoken to him.
Yes, I have.
Well, this sounds like a great company, Tom. So any help, I think Scott would really appreciate. Scott, how would Tom get in touch with you during the week?
You can email me at scott@dropfire.com.
Very good, Scott. Yeah, I have some other ideas, and I'll ping you off.
I'd appreciate that.
Up here. Great.
Thanks for calling, Tom. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye now.
Okay.
Now, we might have talked about this a little while ago. How long did you start this, the day this became a reality for you? How long ago was that?
Well, the company's actually morphed several times over the years, but okay. I started it in 2001.
2001?
A space odyssey.
Yeah. Rick, you're right there with it. I got to tell you.
I like it.
I'm on my game today. I'm on my game.
Yeah, on top of it.
But
this new focus has only been about the last year.
About the last year you got into this healthcare side of things and stuff like that.
So we started in public safety. We worked our way into public health, pre-hospital, and now we're into the hospitals.
Excellent.
Very
good.
It's
been a transition.
Well, you know, Dex, why don't we give Scott a little rest here, because he's been peppered with a lot of questions, and say hello to Chuck Morse right now.
Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thanks. How are you?
Oh, we're great. So nice to for you to drive up.
Appreciate it.
Come up and see us over here now.
Chuck, well, tell us about the Fairness Doctrine. What's that all about?
The Fairness Doctrine is on Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. It emanates out of Norfolk. Norfolk?
Yeah.
In Mass. I understand there's a local colloquial way of saying it. And basically, we talk left-right politics, social issues. I tend to be on the right, and my co-host, Patrick O'Heffernan, is on the left. He comes out of San Francisco, NPR reporter out there. I've been in talk radio for many years, and we've developed, he's actually, for a liberal, a fairly nice guy, and we get along fairly well, although occasionally there's a couple of fisticuffs, at least remotely.
Yeah, I was going to say,
not actually, literally.
Sparring of the words, so to speak.
Exactly.
Good deal.
And we have on lots of liberal and conservative experts on different topics. We each give them equal time. The concept of the Fairness Doctrine, as you guys know, it being in radio, is that the government wants to impose a Fairness Doctrine and censor all of radio, whereas any time an opinion is expressed that's either conservative or liberal, more likely conservative because it's radio, they're going to bring in equal time for a liberal opinion, which will be the end of talk radio. So we're suggesting that our program will give radio stations the opportunity to have a balanced program, and they won't have to have government censorship.
Fair and balanced. I've heard that before.
Well, that's right.
Well, so much for First Amendment, but you know, I'm sure that's brought up on your radio show as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's you know, talk radio is the last great, you guys know this, and it's the last soapbox left in America where you can stand up, anyone can call in, express their opinion. It's right off the street. It's primal. There's no editors there sifting around and fixing it up, and no snobby, you know, editorial boards deciding what we get to learn and how we learn it. You get to hear directly from people. You get to talk. There's something about it that, you know, we're all in love with this business. We know what that's about.
Well, there was one thing you just said a minute about the fairness, you know, having balance. And you know, one side says it, the other side's got a chance to kind of rebut to it. But I got to tell you, the silver lining to it, to me, would be is that if somebody's on the fence, and I'm coming from the right side a little bit, but
you libertarian.
Yeah, that's right. if you really kind of spell it out there, and people, like I said before, are on the fence, and they start hearing the conversation on how it's going, the average guy with a little bit of common sense, he's going to figure out that I don't want the government in my back pocket telling me how to do everything. And he's going to see the light. So I can imagine there would be a good things to come out of it. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why radio tends to be conservative, because people don't, even liberals, I mean, look at Boston, for example. Rush Limbaugh has been huge for over 10 years. And Boston is supposed to be so liberal. It is voting-wise, but average people don't want to hear a radio program where they talk about, let's raise taxes, let's increase regulation, let's surrender abroad, let's have judges make laws from the bench. That doesn't resonate with average people. So liberalism is not popular in the air.
Well, and the liberals got the regular network channels anyhow, so might as well have a few AM stations for us Republicans and libertarians.
But I think what's going to be interesting is when the Fairness Doctrine does go into national syndication in the first week in January, we're going to be picked up by Air America and a lot of liberal stations, and I can't wait to get to that and to, you know, hear the callers and just, I mean, people already, I mean, the guests we've had on the left who hear me, it's almost like they need smelling salts. These people travel in some rarefied world and they just don't hear anything outside of their own little cult-like opinions. Yeah.
You know, it was interesting. There's a couple of things. First of all, being in Massachusetts, which is voting, a very liberal voting state, people tend to be liberal until it's something that directly affects them.
Right.
And then they become very conservative. And there was an interesting thing Winston Churchill said years ago. He goes, if you're 18 and aren't a liberal, you have no heart. If you're 50 and not a conservative, you have no brain.
Well, you know, Mike, you bring up a...
Mike, that's a good one.
Yeah, I remember that. That's good.
You know, you bring up a good point about Massachusetts and that people may vote liberal, they may think of themselves as liberal, but the way they conduct their lives is generally conservative. An example of that is that this state is one of the least oriented toward the big mortgage meltdown. We didn't have a lot of the subprime mortgages. We haven't had a lot of the foreclosures that other parts of the
Bonnie Frank.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. But it's because, you know, people in the state are a little bit more conservative when it comes to taking out mortgages. Banks and lending institutions didn't give away as many of these mortgages with no money down and that sort of thing. It generally reflects our, we have a more of a conservative value. Maybe it goes back to our Yankee past. I don't know.
Chuck, how do you see, you know, you're on the air all the time. We have a booming young entrepreneur sitting next to you.
Yeah.
What's going on to help people like Scott?
Well, I mean, Scott, you touched on the fact that there's been more difficult to get investment money. There's been a credit crunch in this country. I think it's worldwide. A lot of it has to do with the government interference in the mortgage industry. And as a result, there's been an implosion in credit. But you know, as you say, I mean, if you have to just do a little bit more work, you have to knock on a few more doors. You know, people are still working. I mean, we're still here. People are still going to work. People are still hiring. I notice that ad agencies are hiring because they want to stay in business. So, you know, there are ways to be creative in this market. Generally speaking, and I think you guys can attest to this, you have to wear many hats in this business. You can't. The days of our parents where they have one job for their whole life and they go there every day and punch in and that's it, those days are over. You know, people need to develop various skills, and that can include home business, it can include online business. You need to diversify and capitalize on all of the different talents you might have.
I'm just going to pick up on your answer and Rick's point in terms of funding. And I see this all the time with people trying to get into franchise businesses. You know, they might have good collateral, good credit scores, but there are institutions out there, although they've been given tons of money by the government to lend, don't do it. So, I mean, I always try and tell people, go small when you're looking to borrow money. I mean, more in terms of a franchise, go to community banks, go to local banks.
Yes.
Stay away from the big boys, the national banks, because they're not giving out a cent. They're holding all that money for better, just to ensure their own financial future.
Well, it's my understanding that the local banks, as you say, the community banks, the credit unions that didn't get involved with the refinancing from Fannie and Freddie, they basically only would loan money that they had on hand. They only dealt with the assets they had. Those people are doing fine. Those people actually are doing well. In fact, it's an exciting time to be in that business because people are taking their money and putting them in those banks now.
Yeah, again, there's the silver lining again that we talked about. Yeah. Just because somebody screwed up on the higher level, there's a lot of guys that could still manage a great business, still doing things. And that's kind of what we were talking about with Scott. You've created something, and I know there's some competition out there for you in this, but you're still working hard at it, and I'm sure that the day will come and somebody will take advantage of what you're doing.
So. Absolutely. It's just about perseverance.
And getting it out there.
And this is what our show is all about, is the entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, Scott, right?
Exactly. You know what, though, Rick? I mean, it also comes back to the fact that, you know, the days of, I think, wants and excess have passed us. And the fact is people are going to be looking for other businesses to work with, be it banks, be it businesses like Scott's. They're doing business the right way. You know, maybe all of this will end up, all this financial calamity over the past year and a half actually gets us to step back and to sort of reevaluate our values and saying, you know what, it's about doing things the right way, and let's help other people that are doing them the right way.
Well, we just got to get the government to stop spending all that money, because the mom-and-pop guys can't do it, and they're not doing it, and they're surviving, or the government will collapse around them, and that's going to be kind of a calamity in itself. So hopefully that'll straighten out, too.
Well, you know, as government gets bigger and bigger, it makes it harder for entrepreneurs, you know, with more taxes and less money to go around for, you know, entrepreneurial-type things.
Sure, but there's also some access to money, not for what I'm looking for, per se, as far as large venture capital money, but there are, you know, $25,000 grants here and there that people can be astute about and go try to go after.
Yeah, it's you have to work hard. Like you said, you got to work harder to find it. It's not as easy as it was. I remember when the dot-com boom was coming out. I mean, if you had a business plan and a laptop with an idea, you could get $5 million.
Sure.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that came, it had to be a correction, and this is a major correction we're going through now.
Hey, Rick, back then you didn't need a business plan. You needed 3 slides and be able to talk in English.
I have a PowerPoint.
Chuck, how did you get into this crazy radio business?
Well, I had a business that was somewhat low-tech, and that I used to spend a lot of time in the car, driving around New England and eventually around New York, and, of course, in the process of that, I fell in love with radio. The intimacy of it, the listening to people calling in off the street, I looked to it for information. I always have been involved with politics. And I just, I ended up going to Tufts and getting trained in radio, and then from there, I've done radio off and on ever since.
You mean they have schools for this radio thing?
Well, it wasn't really a school. They had a station with a bunch of guys with blue hair and tattoos and play music, and I show up, you know, conservative, and they're like, it's like I'm from another planet. But no, they gave me a slot, and they trained me, and that was, what else can I say?
Oh, you've been on for over 10 years now. Huh?
Yeah, I'd say so.
When you started, when you were 12?
Right, sure, yes.
Well,
thank you. The check's in the mail.
Yeah. Well, in 10 years, I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes coming up and the different conversations of where we're going. Did you ever think we'd be talking about what we are nowadays on the radio?
I wouldn't have thought it even a year or maybe 2 years ago.
I mean, yeah, that was my point. I guess this is kind of...
The whole thing kind of imploded in September of 08.
Yeah.
And we were told that there were these companies that were too big to fail, which I don't think is true in retrospect. They could have sold off pieces of it. They could have... I mean, General Motors, for example, I mean, I think Mitt Romney was right in that they could have reorganized and had a bankruptcy, and the union and the management, both sides would have had to come to the table and sit down and crunch some numbers, that they'd lose the golden goose.
Right.
Instead of our enabling them by basically what's happened is we've gone in and we now own it. And I think that's the wrong way to go.
You know, Chuck, on this fairness doctrine show that you have, you're talking about you're going national in January.
Right.
What are the challenges for taking a radio show from, you know, one station and rolling it out?
Well, first of all,
I know a show that might be interesting.
Yes,
and kind of a loaded question.
No, not at all. And we're talking about that. And basically, once we're up on the Citadel satellite, which is the big satellite, you have access to hundreds of stations nationally, even internationally. And then you basically present it to the stations. Stations, as you know, will have an opening, but usually by the month, and if they like the show, they pick it up. I've already got several stations lined up who have heard advances of the fairness doctrine, but the work is really the syndication, and then obviously the more syndication stations you've got, the more you can get for advertising. Both things kind of work together.
They both grow exponentially.
Right, but ultimately you have to have a good show.
Well, while we're talking about...
I hope we do, too.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about growing a show and sponsors and all, why don't we take a quick break?
What a segue, Dad.
I'm telling you.
That was great.
We're practicing some of this syndicated. This is all practice, I'm telling you.
What's the call-in number?
It is 978-454-4980. We'll be back in just a minute with Scott Cohen, Rick Rudy, Chuck Morris, Mike Matusa, and Dexter Fountain.
And a cast of thousands.
And a cast of thousands. And mind your own business. We'll be right back.
...980 WCAP. Everybody gets it.
Hi, this is Dexter Fountain.
And this is Rick Rudy. We want everybody to listen to Mind Your Own Business, Sundays at 10 a.m. on 980 WCAP, a show for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs.
If you own a business, manage a business, want to start one, buy one, or sell one, this show is for you, along with expert guests and entrepreneurs. The show is all business.
Mind Your Own Business, Sundays at 10 a.m. on 980 WCAP, where everybody gets it.
In this modern age of internet, Wi-Fi, iPod, cell phone, what would you call an electronic way to reach hundreds of thousands of receivers in everybody's car, home, office, on their computers, and all for free? Instant access every hour of every day. Well, that'd be quite a modern and effective electronic messenger. You know what? It's called radio. Local radio reaching hundreds of thousands of receivers all the time without cost, without you hooking up. When you're heard on radio, you're front and center on Merrimack Valley Radio, being heard from Boston to Central New Hampshire and everywhere in between. Put your message on 980 WCAP. News, information, services, entertainment, the best buys, the best health care, great places to go and great opportunities to buy. 980 WCAP. Online at 980WCAP.com. On your radio 24-7 at 980 AM, the most powerful AM signal north of Boston. We are 980 WCAP. And everybody gets it. You're a
good dad. Hi, this is Monica Collins, and I'm presumptuous enough to call myself Dog Lady. And you get to ask Dog Lady whatever you want every Wednesday from 1 to 3. Call in with your dog questions, your dog stories, your dog quirks. We're into it all. It's for mutts and everyone that loves them, right here in the Merrimack Valley. Ask Dog Lady every Wednesday from 1 to 3 on 980 WCAP. Everybody gets it. What a good dog.
We're back here on Mind Your Own Business, rolling into our last segment, working overtime, Dex.
I got to tell you, this part-time job is becoming full-time. We're at the second hour here, my gosh.
We doubled our capacity in 1 week. It's incredible.
Yeah, here we go. We're into the big leagues now, Rick.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Mike Martuz is joining us. We've got Scott Cohen, Chuck Morse. The number is 978-454-4980. And, Chuck, you really got us going here on the political front. We're all kind of talking about stimulus packages. Yeah. And what's going on, Chuck? Tell us, how's the economy?
Well, the economy is not improving anytime soon. I mean, there's some of the indicators look good, but the actual transactions, business, job creation, that's not there. The U.S. Senate now is looking at the bill that was just passed by the House regarding the national health care plan. They're gonna pass that, I think. I think President Obama will sign it probably as soon as by the end of this year, if not in January. They're going to put back the abortion coverage, so they're going to get that, even though it was taken out in the House. They'll find a way to put it back in. And they will put back the mandatory end-of-life counseling, what Sarah Palin called death councils, which is the truth. And it's going to cost us a fortune. It's going to be an utter disaster.
And who's going to pay for it?
Well, it's interesting that they brag about the fact that this is not going to be a deficit problem. Yeah, it's not, mainly because it's going to cost every working family $15 grand a year, plus $5 grand in extra costs before they get to the deductibles. And for families that make over, say, you know, $50,000 a year, $70,000 a year, it's going to be $25,000 a year, and it's going to be mandatory. If we take a look at, you know, they look at the Massachusetts system as a good example, but yeah, we all know that it's not starting to show signs of serious problems in the state. Already there's talk about raising taxes to pay for the connector or rationing it, and this isn't something the Boston Globe talks about too much, but it's coming down the pike, and that's what's going to happen nationally with a takeover of the entire industry.
Well, in fact, they've already raised, I think, as of October, you cannot get high-deductible health care policies in the state anymore.
Right.
Because people were taking the cheap way out, not paying a lot into the system by taking $10,000 or $20,000 deductibles.
That's right.
And now they forced that down so that the premiums would be higher to take them to support the system.
It's an unfunded mandate, and it's really quite sad because there are things that Congress could do to lower the cost of premiums. For one thing, they could get rid of all of the mandates that drive up the cost of health care for all of us, when people actually could get a rider on their policies to deal with very specific problems. We could go into a bunch of them. I mean, we're going to have to pay for boob jobs, basically. Why not?
Why have... Look at me, Chuck.
You know, Chuck, I always thought the easiest thing they could do is break down the barriers on the states so that insurance companies can offer insurance policies, health insurance, anywhere in the country.
And compete, the free market. In fact, it was brought up in the 08 campaign. John McCain said that he was for that. And Biden, speaking for the Obama campaign, said, no, we don't want that. I mean, there are things that could be done like that, that are kind of around the edges, that don't require this radical takeover, that would lower the cost of premiums. Tort reform comes to mind. We all hear a lot about that, but we know that the trial lawyers are big Democrat contributors, and they're not rushing to do that anytime soon.
Well, the thing across state lines is proven, because if you live in Virginia or Idaho or someplace else, where someone in this, someone in this state might pay $500 per person per month on a policy, you might be able to get something very close to that in some of these other states for $150, $200 a month.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not like the car insurance, or, you know, Allstate.
Well, one of the things I got an email the other day, and it kind of struck me, and made me think about it a little bit. They talk about, you know, Democrats spending all this money, and they were saying how the Democratic Party, they were all lawyers. I mean,
right.
The guy from South Carolina, Edwards, and Obama, his wife. I mean, all the people. They just went right down the list. They were all attorneys. And then they got to the Republican side, and they were talking about Bush being an entrepreneur. The old man was the entrepreneur. Mitt Romney, Cheney, and they went down the list of that. And it struck me as kind of strange. But then again, you stop and think about it, they spent money like crazy too. Who is out there that has some good fiscal understanding of what can save this country?
Ron Paul? No, I don't know.
This is not a plug to the libertarians, but I guess that was the thing that's always driven me crazy. With a mom and pop, they buckle down, they trim the fat, they do everything they possibly can to keep their business going. And it's not a Democratic thing, it's not a Republican thing. They're all spending, like Mike just said, like drunken sailors. And it's gotten crazy. It's absolutely crazy out of hand. Are you talking to people out there that know how to do fiscal responsibility on the government level?
Well, you know, look, one of the fundamental phenomena of the past maybe decade is that the country is becoming almost divided between what I would call the taxpayers and the tax consumers. In other words, people who are receiving tax money either because they're federal, state, local employees, or they're members of public unions, or they are getting grants from the government. They're somehow benefiting from the government, and that even includes now big corporations. And they have an interest in big government. Lawyers have an interest in big government because laws give them an advance. It's like a cottage industry. And I don't really know how to answer it because, you know, you do have this division. An example was in the city of Quincy last year. There was a teacher strike, and they shut down the schools before the end of the year. And the mayor wanted a minor concession from the teachers union, something like less of a deductible on their health insurance policy, and they just refused to go along with it. Eventually, there was a compromise, and eventually he buckled under, and they got their benefit. But what was interesting was that almost half of the people in Quincy supported the union position. That's because so many people now in that city are on the public payroll, or they have friends or family who are on the public payroll. So you had a city that was divided 50-50 between people who were somehow benefiting from taxpayer money and people who are paying the taxes.
And as government grows, that's going to perpetuate.
Well, that's the problem.
Well, it's not only that problem, but usually public or state employees also have COLA riders on their retirement plans, so they end up getting more and more and more money. Their retirement payments are indexed to inflation, unlike people who work for themselves or even work in a corporation.
They get a raise every year. They get enormous pensions, the type of pensions we probably dream of having.
Right.
And they're complaining. And I understand. I'm not against public employees. That's not the issue here. But, another Massachusetts issue that came up recently is that this state says it's going broke, and the governor has raised taxes. And every so often, the Boston Globe writes an article about how we all need to think together about how to help the state raise money. Like, this is something we all want to do. But then it comes out that in the course of the hiring of Marion Walsh, remember that?
Oh, that was a big thing, and that keeps going on.
But the interesting story about that, besides the fact that she was going to be getting $175,000 for a job that hadn't been filled for 6 years, the subtext to that story was that there were 54 of these quasi-public agencies in the state, 54, and nobody, including the governor himself, knows who they are, what they do, what the capital expenses are, how many employees they have, what their perks are, what their, you know, pension plans are, their health insurance. I mean, this is an issue I'm trying to get into on my show. I want to know exactly what these agencies are. I want to see their budgets. I want to know what they do.
I thought there was transparency in government.
Transparency is right. They are transparent. We don't even know who they are, what their names are.
Chuck, one of the things...
they're costing us a fortune.
I agree with that. One of the things I want to ask you is, you know, in your background, on your resume, you've run for Congress twice.
Right.
What does it take for, you know, we need new people to step up. What's that like trying to...
I urge people to do it. It's exhilarating. Even if you don't win, you get to step up. I mean, I debated Barney Frank a half a dozen times. I wrote a book about it. And I caused change. I mean, I got him removed from the House Homeland Security Committee, thank goodness, because of some issues I brought up during the campaign, and the Globe followed up on it, which I thank them for.
I don't think you listened to the Flower Show we had on earlier.
Oh, you did? It's a great... If you have a cause out there, and you're a teenager, you're a housewife, you're a retired person, you have some time to run for office, whether it be a local school board or whether it be Congress, I urge people to do it. Get out there and do it. It's great.
Well, one of the things, I was listening to another show the other day, and they were talking about in school, they don't teach that civics anymore to understand how the government works. Most of these people think that it's just, they just send out money to you. Like, here's a little bonus for being in the country, whether you're here illegally or not. There's money, and people don't get how you go about change and all that stuff, which is kind of sad. And I'll be honest with you, I just read the book Common Sense by Glenn Beck, so I got this modern progressive notion going on in my head.
Sure.
But I think there's something to be said for that what we learned and what they're teaching now, way different 20 years ago.
Well, the one book that you're never going to find in high school, besides the Bible, of course, is the U.S. Constitution. Civics classes aren't looking at the actual laws of the land and discussing them. And a couple of years ago, there was a congressman, Shadegg, from Arizona, who submitted a bill that did not pass but should have, which said that all laws debated in Congress need to be no bigger than 3 pages. They need to be, they could be understood by a high school class. No hidden anything. They should be posted on a website. And then high school classes should debate them as part of their civics lessons. That way we could actually participate more in the government, and the government would have to be more honest.
See, that's kind of what I was getting at before. It's nice to hear that there's some people out there that do have some common sense about making it for the common man again, because it has changed that a lot, and that's a separate, Mike.
Well, so I think Jefferson said, Thomas Jefferson said, when they first set up the government in the country, he said, essentially, we need a revolution about every 20 years in order to clean out what ends up being the detritus that becomes the government.
Yes.
I mean, everybody knows that the government was set up at some point that people would feel obligated to do public service for a period of time and then go back to whatever they were doing. It was never meant to be a lifelong endeavor for some of these congressmen and senators. They get in at 30, 32, and they die in office.
Right.
They never understand what entrepreneurs or what regular people have to put up with, because they get their own set of perks, their own health care, their own pension systems. How can you create laws for people when you're not there yourself?
I think it was George McGovern, the senator from South Dakota, who, after retiring from the U.S. Senate, and he was an honorable man, he went into a private business. They owned a bed and breakfast in Vermont. After 1 year, it went bankrupt. And then he was on record saying, you know, I realized that after I was in Congress for 30 years, I didn't know a damn thing about business. And yet I was making laws that affected business and regulated business. So you're quite right. You know, you want to have somebody who has been around the horn a little bit in terms of making a living, balancing their own budget, maybe having a few failures under their belt.
How about some street smart?
As someone who's a lawmaker, because they understand the real world.
You know, that is true, because, the lawyers and career politicians are making all the decisions, and the average person, they can't relate to them anymore.
Well, they can't relate to them, but ultimately, whether they're Democrat or Republican,
right,
their job is to get themselves reelected. That's all they're trying to do, is keep their seat in power. Regular people like us, we don't matter as long as we keep voting them in.
And paying taxes.
Well, that's their business plan. They've set that model up. It's not what I'm going to do, it's how I'm going to, what I'm going to do to get me reelected again and again and again.
Whatever happened to term limits, Chuck? Wasn't that
well,
an issue?
Well, I'm against that, but I will say this. I'm researching a book right now, and I found a very interesting little fact, and that was that in 1912, the Congress limited the number of congressmen to 435 forever. And before that, Congress kept growing based upon the population. I think that was a mistake. I think we should have thousands of congressmen in Washington. And because that way, the congressmen won't have to spend all this money and be beholden to special interests in order to get reelected. They can, you, the congressman can actually know everyone in their district face to face. You could, you know, a regular person could go out, knock on doors, meet everyone, and get elected, and you wouldn't have this need for all this money to go into media, the special interests coming in and buying up congressmen, because they won't need them.
Chuck, there are two ways to get around that. The ancient Greeks, when they elected people, they essentially, it was everybody sort of got a turn. You ended up serving in the democracy by, you know, they had a basket of white stones with one black stone in it. Whoever picked out the black stone that time was going to be the representative. The only way we can get around to that today, I tell people, is whoever the incumbent is, vote for somebody else. It doesn't matter what party you're voting for, vote for the other guy.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. I think that a good person, if they present an agenda, they should be reelected. But, I mean, the problem is that the best way to get the money out of it and the special interests out of it is to make these districts more manageable. Right now, to run for Congress in, like, the 4th District, it's so big and so vast that you need a lot of money to do it. And in order to get the money, you have to take in special interests who basically then own a piece of it.
Chuck, if people want to tune in to you during the week, because you're very fascinating, do you have a website? Or
ChuckMorse.com.
And you're on 3 to 5 daily.
That's right.
In Norfolk, Mass.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay.
Does that station stream live, too?
Yes.
And what's the state?
I didn't know you wanted me to mention that.
Yeah, well, can we get it off of your site? Or
We'll go to your site
and get it there.
There you go.
Kind of like MYOB, the radio show. We stream live there, too.
Scott, how about you? How do people find you?
Sure, they can check out my website, dropfire.com, my blog, dropfire.blogspot.com, or email me directly, scott@dropfire.com.
Yeah, we also have Scott's groupie in the room today, too. It's kind of nice. It's kind of brightened up our whole day here. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope we didn't bore you to death, son.
Well,
good. Another one that didn't fall asleep watching us, listening to our show. And Mike's still awake over there, so life's good.
And Mike Matuza, thanks for joining us. We look forward to next week. And by the way, we're cooking up a very special show for next week at 10 o'clock. We may be doing an entertainment show. And the rumor is that we're...
Are you spinning plates again, Rick?
No, but the rumor is we're going to have live in studio one of the blues legends from around here, James Montgomery.
Wow.
And James might be playing a few tunes in the studio. And we have some other surprise guests as well. You have to check our blog to find out.
Right, and just to let everybody know, too, we've got a networking event. We're planning one for early December, another Thursday night. If anybody out there listening has got an idea where they might like to have one, please let us know. We're open to suggestions. It's gonna get tough competition going after JoJo's last time, but we're open to go a little bit north or wherever you'd like us to be.
Well, so check out myobtheradioshow.com, because we try to keep everybody updated with blogs and stuff. They don't always get up in time, but we keep trying. We got a few bugs we're working out of our system. But everybody, thanks for listening in, and we'll see you next week, 9 to 11, on WCAP.
You've been listening to Mind Your Own Business with Dexter Fountain and Rick Rudy. Join us every Sunday for great information on buying, selling, or starting your own business. Mind Your Own Business on 980 WCAP. Everybody gets it.
Nine.
980 WCAP, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, Methuen, Nashua, and Salem, New Hampshire, serving the Merrimack Valley.